Welcome to the Tanakh podcast. This is Alex Israel. Today, Shoftim chapter 8. Today's podcast has been sponsored by my sister Deborah Broder in honor of our father, Henry Israel, and in honor of her husband, Benji Broder, on the occasion of their birthdays. One of the major themes of our chapter is the question of Jewish unity. Gideon has had a tremendous victory. He's defeated over 120,000 of the enemy. Only 15,000 get away to Eva HaYarden. More about that in a minute. But in the opening line of our chapter, the tribe of Ephraim, remember that Gideon is from Manasseh, Ephraim come along and they say, Ma ha-davar hazeh asita lanu levilti korot lanu, ki halachta lelechem b'midyan. Why didn't you call us? Why didn't you give us part of the prestige, part of the war? Why did you go and fight alone? And Gideon responds in a remarkable way, diffusing the tension. And here he really shows his dexterity as a phenomenal leader. He says, Ma siti atakachem? Ma siti atakachem? What have I done? Now you are just like us. Halotov ololot Ephraim mibetzir Aviezer. Better are the pickings of Ephraim than the harvest of Aviezer. In other words, Ephraim, you're the ones who managed to take everybody and kill them by the Yarden. Why did you need to be there for the major harvest that I did? Biedchem natan Elohim et sarei Midyan. You are the ones who killed Orev and Ze'ev, the leaders. O maya cholti asot kachem. Here we see that Gideon acts in a remarkable way. We will contrast this later on with the leader Yiftach, who gets in a very nasty civil war when he is attacked. But Gideon has a finesse. He has an ability to diffuse intertribal tensions. However, in the second bit of the story, we see a different spirit in Gideon, because he goes with his men. He's still the same 300 men, and he goes chasing to Eva HaYarden, and he asks for some help from two Jewish cities. One is called Sukkot, and one is called Penuel. And both of them refuse to help. Why do they refuse to help? I think it seems pretty clear. They are in Eva HaYarden. They are in the Transjordan. They're exposed. And they're worried that if Gideon doesn't finish the job and that the Midianites are still left in place, the Midianites will come back if they are collaborators with Gideon. The Sukkot and Penuel will be the object of retribution by the Midianite forces. By the way, those two places, Penuel and Sukkot, both appear in our Parshat Shavua and Parshat Vayishlach. The people of Penuel and the people of Sukkot are unwilling to assist, and Gideon won't tolerate it. He says, when I come back from defeating the enemy, I'm going to punish you, because as far as Gideon is concerned, if you can't back up your soldiers, if you can't give support for soldiers who have been on the chase for 24 hours, then you're not worth you're not an ally. And therefore he promises to punish them. And in fact, this is exactly what he does. It says, Vayachet ha-machaneh, he destroys the Midianite camp. They were, v'ha-machaneh ha-yabetach, they thought they were out of Gideon's orbit. And he catches Zebach and Salmona, the remaining captains. And on the way home, he punishes the people of Sukkot and the people of Penuel. One little tidbit here, which is very cute, is that he wants to punish the leaders of Sukkot. And it says, verse 14, he captures a boy of Sukkot. And he said to him, who are the leaders of your town? And the boy, vayichtov elav et sarei Sukkot. He actually wrote the names down. And this is one of the sources whereby people prove the fact that in ancient Israel, there was a tradition of reading and writing, that people who were Jewish in the ancient world were not illiterate, that they actually, the kids, just a child, you could anticipate that he knew how to write. Whichever way, here we show Gideon as a phenomenal leader. On the one hand, he could diffuse this terrible fight with Ephraim, and on the other hand, he won't tolerate people not supporting their soldiers, and he takes them to task for that. And this leads me straight to the end of the chapter, verse 22, where Gideon is given an offer after this amazing victory, where they say, "Meshol banu gamata gam bincha gam ben bincha, reign over us, you, your son, and your grandson." They're asking him to be a king. He responds, "Lo mshol ani bachem, v'lo mshol bani bachem. I won't rule over you, neither will my son. Hashem yimshol bachem. God will rule over you." Was Gideon correct? Gideon seems the ideal candidate for the king. In fact, in the very previous verse, and it seems like Gideon must have come from a very special family, because when Gideon interrogates Zebach and Salmona, he says, "Where are those men who you killed at Har Tabor?" And they say to him, "Kamocha kamohem, you look just like them. Echad ketor b'nei amelech, you look like royals." And he says, "Achai b'nei imihem, they are my brothers." Interestingly, that even Zebach and Salmona identify Gideon and his brothers as of almost royal appearance. You know, the end of the story is very telling, because Gideon then says, "I won't rule over you, only God will." And he says, why don't he sort of does a bit of an Egel HaZahav. He says, "Bring all of your golden nose rings." And it says they brought all of the booty, the golden rings, which they took from these Yishmaelim. And what they make is an ephod. We're going to come back to the concept of an ephod. The ephod was the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol. It was used as an oracle. It was used to talk to God. And they make a sort of ephod. And it tells us, "Vahi l'Gidon ul'beito l'mokesh." It led them in a negative direction. In other words, it seems that what eventually happened was that it led them to maybe idolatry. In the very next verse, it also tells us about Gideon having 70 sons, ki nashim rabot hayulo. He had many, many wives. Interesting. A lot of wives and a problem with gold. This sounds very much like the laws of the king in Israel, where it warns us that if you have a king, he shouldn't have too much gold, it'll lead him astray. He shouldn't have too many wives. In other words, Gideon, well, let's just pan out a little bit. The book of Shoftim is examining the question of leadership in ancient Israel. In ancient Israel, we don't have a king. We have these ad hoc leaders, which we call Shoftim, saviors. And wouldn't we love it if we could have some sort of stable government who could hold our enemies at bay and achieve a national defense? What are we learning from this story? Was Gideon correct in refusing to be king? On the one hand, we have a warning about the king here. Look, he got it messed up with gold and too many wives. On the other hand, should Gideon have answered the request positively and said, "Yes, I'll rule over you"? After all, he has so many virtues. If we go right from the beginning, he was willing to fight the Baal. Yerubal is his second name. He's a person who is sort of hesitant and asks God all the way along. He's always checking with God. Isn't that ideal? And he's a phenomenal army captain, and he knows how to unify the tribes, knows when to put his foot down, and also knows when to have a soft hand. So we leave Gideon with this very interesting question about, you know, do we need a king? Is a king a problematic thing? And I think this is part of the sort of like topic that Sefer Shoftim is trying to engage in. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you tomorrow with a very negative story, the story of Avimelech.